From the Geddes Burgeon and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll break down the college's new increase in tuition and discuss other news from the past week relevant to the Gettysburg community.
Then we have Sounds of Sunderman, and Ben Ponce will interview Pat McKenna, the parliamentarian of Student Senate, about a bunch of fun stuff. Stay with us.
Okay, this is a pretty free-forming, potentially loose show of On Target.
We're playing fast and loose with the rules this week, folks.
Yeah, just not the FCC rules. We're going to follow those
certainly
to the T as per normal here on Target.
As we certainly are not ones to violate federal regulation here at WZBT.
Speaking of federal regulations, not speaking of federal regulations at all, but speaking of, you know, how much money you have to pay to come on and say word salad sorts of things on the WZBT radio station.
To have the privilege of coming on, too.
Yeah, a privilege indeed.
It
is. The 2018-19 comprehensive fee, including tuition, room, and board, to attend Gettysburg College will be $67,490, a 3.5% increase from 2017-18. The same 3.5% that the 2017-18 clip was over 2016-17. President Janet Morgan Riggs said it's like sticking to the status quo with that particular tuition increase. Although last year, at this time, she told us in an interview that we did via Facebook Live that the college's goal was to move tuition increases more in line with the consumer price index to better reflect inflation. Except this, the 2017 CPI rose 2.1%. So clearly we're not quite there yet. Jamie, you were at the meeting. It was a town hall meeting for administrators and support staff at which President Riggs announced that the Board of Trustees had approved this, I guess, at its February meeting. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of reasoning she gave and also about sort of the overall financial context that she presented?
So she had a lot of financial information before she actually presented the tuition figures. So that was sort of like what everything was leading up to. And she started out with a lot of charts. The broad strokes on it is that the college is not seeing the big increases in revenue that it requires to be able to actually pay employees a lot more money. And they have to increase the tuition by this 3.5% to even basically keep the revenues where they are. And she spoke a lot about this tuition discounting rate, which she was quick to point out that the amount that we discount the tuition price on average is less than the national average. But it is, I believe she said it's at 46% now, which is fairly high.
Yeah, so that tuition discount rate, that means that if tuition, for the sake of round numbers, is $100,000, and the tuition discount rate means that the average financial aid package from the college is $45,000, if it's 45%, and that was the
correct
figure she gave for this year, meaning that only when the college really charges $100,000 a year in tuition, that they only collect $55,000, which is why a 3.5% tuition increase may only lead to an overall increase in revenue of 1%.
Yeah, and she pointed out that this is really a systemic issue in higher ed right now, this tuition discount rate, because what's happening is parents are coming in, and she actually kind of spoke at length about this. Parents are actually coming in and negotiating financial aid packages now. So they'll come into the financial aid office and say something along the lines of, well, College Y is giving my son or daughter, you know, this amount of money. And so what is Gettysburg going to do for us? And so they end up, you know, being pitted against other colleges, and everybody loses there as far as the colleges go. The only real winner is obviously the students, who end up paying less. And when they keep discounting, then they have to keep increasing tuition to help pay for all the discounts that they're giving. So it's sort of this endless cycle of discounts and price increases that...
Well, I mean, but isn't the flip side to that, that each time they raise tuition, that requires them, you know, it's not like they're raising tuition at the same time that people's wages are going up, such that each increase in tuition creates a need for more financial aid because people just can't pay for that. I mean, couldn't you look at the vicious cycle going the other way?
Well, you absolutely could. And, you know, that would certainly be the, you know, something the college relies on is people paying full price. And the college doesn't like to talk about it because that doesn't necessarily tie into their values of diversity, equity, and inclusion. People paying full price is necessary to keep the institution running and to help pay for everyone who can't afford to pay full price but are still qualified to be at Gettysburg College. And that's something that President Riggs touched on today also, is that, you know, the solution some people suggest is, well, stop taking in people that can't pay full price, stop discounting it so much. And she said that that's something the college just doesn't want to do because there are lots of qualified people who she wants to be able to come and have a Gettysburg education.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. President Riggs noted that 91% of financial aid is awarded based on financial need rather than strictly merit-based scholarships, of which there are some. There's the Lincoln Scholarship, which is $25,000 a year. There's the Presidential Scholarship, which increased last year from $15,000 a year to $20,000 a year. For students moving forward, it didn't increase for students who are already here.
Yeah, it certainly didn't.
Not that anybody on this podcast would be bitter. Then there's also the 1832 scholarship, which I believe went from $5,000 to $7,500, and the David Wills scholarship, which I believe went from $10,000 to $15,000. I wrote an article about this last year, so I'm not 100% sure those figures are correct. But the quote from President Riggs today was, quote, "We are very pleased that we are able to offer a Gettysburg education to so many students who are well qualified and who would not have been able to come to Gettysburg without financial assistance. There are just fewer and fewer families that can afford the cost of a Gettysburg education, or if they can afford it, want to afford the cost of a Gettysburg education." You know, I'm interested in this, you were at this meeting, I was not. We've talked about it since it happened, but you hadn't mentioned before that about this conversation regarding students whose parents come in to basically negotiate in financial aid. I know students on this campus who have said that they've done that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, though, you know, why is it different for a college to have to compete in a marketplace where, you know, their people are trying to get the most value for the lowest price? Isn't that how markets work?
That is how markets work. And you know, I don't think that President Riggs was saying she necessarily has a problem with the open free markets. I think her opinion was more along the lines of, this is a reason why the discounts are going up, is because there are articles out on the internet that she specifically called out that tell train parents on how to get more money from the financial aid office. And I don't personally think there's anything wrong with, you know, a little bit of haggling and bargaining. And I mean, you know, if college, you know, Y wants to give you a ton of money and you want to try to leverage that to get more money at Gettysburg, I mean, that's how the open market works. But I think that her argument is that that ends up ultimately making it more expensive for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, that is an interesting point. You know, I would be intrigued to know whether in that 91% of need-based aid figure, whether someone who haggles more, whether that qualifies as need-based aid or merit-based aid.
It would probably qualify as need-based aid.
President Riggs said, quote, "This is the reason," referring to the fact that a 3.5% increase in tuition, or that comprehensive fee, is only going to lead to maybe 1% in increased revenue.
Right.
She said, "This is the reason why department budgets have not been growing at a greater rate, why salaries have not been growing at a greater rate. This, our greatest source of revenue, is essentially flat, almost flat."
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a flat line, but you can see, especially with this new merit-based aid, you can also see that there was a additional increase in financial aid and scholarship costs, because it obviously costs more money when you're giving all these presidential scholars more money. So, you know, in addition to the increase, because we now cost, you know, $65,000 a year, you have, you know, the other aspect, which is the merit-based aid increase. to help compete in the marketplace, because there's a lot of money being thrown around, and parents will look at the dollars that are coming off. And so they'll be looking for the biggest financial aid package. So that's another thing that drives some of this tuition discounting, having a huge sticker price and then discounting the tuition off, is if parents see, you know, if it's, say, a $20,000 a year education and you get a $5,000 scholarship versus it's a $60,000 a year education, but you're getting $35,000 in financial aid, even though it's more expensive to go to that school, you think you're getting a better deal.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly Gettysburg, if it wants to continue to attract students that have, you know, the what we traditionally conceive as merit, and, you know, get those merit-based scholarships, you know, they're going to have to compete on that front too. And so it's, it's a tricky puzzle, I think. And so one that the college has negotiated this year by sticking to the status quo, a 3.5% increase in that tuition, room, and board comprehensive fee, bringing it to $67,490 a year. I believe that's up from $65,210 from this academic year.
One thing I'll note on the way out is President Riggs always has a something that she says after that figure comes up on the screen of what the comprehensive fee is going to be next year. Last year it was takes your breath away. And this year it was, and you wonder why our parents expect a lot of us. This is why. When you're charging $67,490, parents are expecting some value there. A lot of value. That's a house.
Yeah. And, you know, to that, to kind of that point, there were comments on the article that we wrote that was when it was posted on Facebook about, you know, that's some pretty expensive mold.
That is some pretty expensive mold. Yeah.
So maybe that's a nice segue into our next story, which is another update on the ongoing mold saga.
Never seems to end.
No, it doesn't. The college has reported that mold has been discovered at 223 Carlisle Street, which is the former Teak frat house that is still owned by that alumni organization, but currently is just rented to the college's general housing. So mold was discovered in the basement. No one lives in the basement. The basement, I don't even believe, is accessible to students. It's just for storage. But a sump pump had an issue that led to mold. The college has, you know, thinks they've remediated a lot of, or is working to remediate that mold. It's not unlike in the Hansen basement, where students live in the basement. No students live in the 223 Carlisle Street basement. But, you know, coming on the heels of the Hansen incident, the college has again retained Compliance Management International, the environmental consultant, to conduct testing in that building. And they're awaiting the results of those tests, which are expected to come back early next week. So certainly it's an ongoing story. I mean, Jamie, it seems to me the bottom line is there are an awful lot of old buildings on the Gettysburg College campus. And, you know, from time to time, there's going to be mold.
Definitely. In old buildings, it's going to happen. I think the problem that students have is not so much with the fact that there was mold, because I think a lot of students realize that there's going to be issues, maintenance issues in older buildings. I think the problem was more so the deferred maintenance and deferred action on problems until they become so big that they have to move an entire floor. You know, because we know that this issue was reported months or maybe even a couple years before it became the big issue that it was in January, and that there was a little bit of delays and maybe things weren't handled completely the way that maybe in hindsight they might have been handled differently. So, you know, I think definitely with this new work group that's being established, I think that the college is taking steps to ensure that they're taking a proactive approach moving forward to responding to facilities issues so that things don't get as bad in the future. And I think that really they're making good strides toward, you know, helping to repair that relationship with the student body.
Yeah, and among the most kind of outspoken critics of the college's response to the mold situation, at least initially, was Pat McKenna, who we'll talk to later in the program. And, you know, we'll ask him what he thinks. I do think there is some concern, and we saw it on Monday at Senate, that this new team, work group, committee, whatever we're calling it, that's been formed to assess the problem and what to do moving forward, there's concern that college life is going to stack it with people who are not going to raise a fuss. And that kind of came to the fore at Senate on Monday when Senate pushed during the student concerns section of the meeting. There was several calls, and I think they have been heated. Heated with a D, to have Senate appoint those students who will be participating on that committee. Senate President Luke Frigun on Thursday afternoon sent out a campus-wide email encouraging people to apply to join that task force. I think task force is the term that he used. And so Student Senate is going to have some role. We don't know exactly what that role will be yet in appointing those students. And I imagine this committee will, task force, I think is what they're calling it, will hit the ground running after spring break. And President Riggs charged them to come up with their recommendations by the end of the academic year. So hopefully we'll get some more information on that front in the coming weeks, in the coming months. You know, all of this is coming to, you know, the fore right as the college is working to recruit the class of 2022. You know, there are students who are touring campus and you know, Jamie, do you think that this will have any effect on those recruitment efforts?
I don't know. It's certainly something that President Riggs pointed out today, is that we are in yield season and admissions has to work very hard every year to recruit amazing Gettysburgians to come to campus. And I can tell you, probably having a photo of mold on the front page of the Gettysburgian or on our website, or, you know, having people talking about, oh, hey, have you heard what's going on with the mold and it's overheard on campus, it's probably not going to be the greatest thing for yield. But I think that the college's response, and that they've really now taken things to heart and are making efforts to make things better, I think that that will have an effect. You know, and I think that does come through, at least in our reporting.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it doesn't seem to me like it can help.
It probably won't help, but, you know, I think that probably admissions has a plan to help to mitigate the parent.
Perhaps to concerns. Remediate.
Perhaps to remediate their concerns. Yes, just yeah. Like the Hanson basement is being remediated.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that certainly the college's response of late, once, you know, it's kind of interesting that initially 2 weeks ago on Monday, Kira Kant came to the Senate meeting. And I will tell you that, you know, I'm a pretty close observer of the Gettysburg College Student Senate. And my prediction going into that meeting was that, you know, Kira would take questions and, you know, people would probably vent some frustration, but ultimately everyone would move on with their lives. And that meeting spiraled, I think it's safe to say,
out of control.
Fair to say, it spiraled out of control.
Completely out of control.
And that's not something I anticipated. And I'm frankly not sure it's something the college anticipated. You know, I think that the flashpoint, you know, the one thing was that Kira did not apologize on behalf of the college at that meeting, despite kind of being given about as close to an engraved invitation as you could expect. And, you know, it's not entirely clear why she didn't apologize, but, you know, that spiraled out of control. And then the next day, Dean Ramsey, you know, then Dean Ramsey was involved. And so it's kind of been a spiraling thing.
And here's what Dean Ramsey had to say on the show last week about why Kira didn't apologize right away.
I think she was just a little taken aback because from her perspective, she's really thought about nothing else since the beginning of the year. She's been focused on this literally for 2 months, every single day. My guess is she was just really taken aback and didn't quite know how to respond.
Yeah, and so, you know, and as each, it's gotten to higher and higher levels, you know, first it was at the director of residential first year programming, associate dean level, mm-hmm. and then it got up to the Dean Ramsey level, and now President Riggs has weighed in too. And so I do think that shows that, you know, the administration, whether it took a PR crisis for them to take it seriously, which I think is certainly the grumblings that in many cases I've heard around campus, you know, but eventually President Riggs and Dean Ramsey did get involved. And now, you know, based on my reporting, our reporting that we've seen, two of the basement residents who are on Senate, Abby Hauer and Marissa Belanda, have both, you know, largely expressed that they thank Dean Ramsey and President Riggs for stepping in. I think it was a key step that they did restore that priority housing that was originally promised to the basement residents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, moving forward, I think the college and whether they are ready to say this publicly or not, or, you know, maybe they never will say it publicly, but, you know, I think the college probably learned some, I don't want to say learned their lesson, like it's some sort of a, you know, finger wagging sort of thing, but I think the college probably, you know, has taken some of the criticism they've heard to heart and seem to be making at this point. And, you know, we'll certainly be following up on the fruits of the talk that's happening now. But I think they're certainly making an effort to show that they're going to look into a lot of these grievances that were raised, not just about the Hanson mold response, but about facilities concerns in general. And particularly as our infrastructure on campus ages, mm-hmm. you know, there are a lot of older buildings around here, and that's going to only be grow more important in the coming years.
I would absolutely agree. And, you know, Dean Ramsey and Dan Consula, the vice president of finance administration, definitely sort of echoed that sentiment, I think, on the podcast last week. They, you know, were talking about how these issues have really come to the fore and how they really recognize that they need to, you know, change things and change processes and reevaluate really, you know, every part of the process for work orders. And I believe Dean Ramsey said last week that at this point, everything's on the table as far as changes to be made to prevent something like this from happening again in the future. So,
yeah. And I think that from that Monday Senate meeting where tensions flared, tempers flared and tensions were high, that, you know, since then, I don't want to say cooler heads have prevailed, but I think everyone has kind of taken a step back. I think we heard that when we spoke with Senate President Luke Frigon last week. You know, he was in the meeting. He suggested a class action lawsuit.
Yeah, and he definitely changed his tune on that last week. Here's a clip of that.
On Monday, you had mentioned, floated particularly the possibility of a class action lawsuit. Is it fair to say that's not something you're pursuing at this point?
That is fair to say, yes.
So, and is that because of the meeting that you had? Do you feel that they're adequately listening to and responding to the concerns that students had at Senate?
I think they are. I really think they are. And I definitely got that sense of concern, like I said, from the both of them. And I think that kind of made me think, okay, well, there are steps being taken, or there are steps being taken towards steps. And I just think we haven't seen that in the past. And I think the actual expression of that is nice.
Yeah, and so he's walked that back, and I think Dean Ramsey kind of acknowledged that, as maybe President Riggs did too. Dean Ramsey said that, you know, when students start talking about lawsuits, what they really mean is that they don't feel that what they've said has been heard. And I think she took that to heart, as evidenced by the issuing of an apology the very next day. And as evidenced by President Riggs' response, I think she's taken it to heart too, forming this committee. You know, we'll see what happens. I think it's very... I don't want to sound cynical, but I do think it's fairly easy from President Riggs' vantage point to say, let's put together a committee to assess this and make recommendations. And I think that's a pretty easy move for her to make. I don't know why it took this long for her to make it. But, you know, I think many are seeing that as a positive step. And, you know, I think it's safe to say the Gettysburg will not be the only ones who are interested in holding the college accountable and in following up on where these things go. Jamie, I'll give you the last word.
I'll just say that I think definitely people will continue to be following this story very closely, and so will we here at the Gettysburg and WZBT. So that wraps up our news segment. Right now we have the Sounds of Sunderman segment, and this is going to be this week from the Wind Symphony concert that happened last month. It was really fantastic. It was sort of a trip through the radio dial, as it were. I believe it was called Live on Air, and it was a fantastic show. It was actually simulcast on WZBT. And here is a little clip of one of the medleys that was played. It was called Disco Fever, obviously from the disco era, and it features alto saxophone soloist Jenna Pavis, class of 2021, and here it is. Well, I'm certainly feeling the boogie groove, but now it's time to boogie down with the Bullet Report.
All right, that was a pretty disturbing intro, but we'll do the Bullet Report nonetheless. On the women's basketball team, on March the 2nd, defeated Albright 74-65 in the first round of the women's NCAA Division III basketball tournament, but they lost the next day on March the 3rd to number 16 Montclair State 70-45, ending their season. But they did win the Centennial Conference Championship, so congratulations to the women's basketball team. The men's lacrosse team, on March the 3rd, defeated number 15 Stevenson 7-6, another defeat of a ranked opponent. The women's lacrosse team defeated Denison 17-4. They're the defending national champions, defeating Denison, who was the number 25 team. The Gettysburg women's lacrosse team certainly looking to defend that national title. Coach Carol Cantelli will be joining us in a future edition of the podcast to discuss that further. The baseball team lost to Hood 12-3 on March the 4th. They lost to Stevenson 8-7 on March the 6th. They lost to Messiah 9-0 on March the 8th. The men's lacrosse team, however, defeated number 4 York 8-6. They've now defeated the number 1 team in the country, the number 4 team in the country, and the number 15 team in the country. Lots of great Gettysburg College sports action. Thus endeth the Bullet Report.
Thanks so much for that, Ben. And up next, we have Senate parliamentarian Pat McKenna. Stay with us.
And we're joined today by Pat McKenna, chair of the Senate Policy Committee and parliamentarian and a member of the Freedom of Expression Workgroup. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Yeah, so I want to get right into the freedom of expression philosophy. I know you were obviously involved on the committee that wrote the statement. And this past Monday, the Student Senate unanimously, without really any discussion at the meeting, which I thought was a little bit interesting, approved the philosophy. I just wanted to get your reaction to Senate's approval and, you know, the next steps.
Well, I was really, really pleased that Senate was able to pass this philosophy unanimously. I think it was a process that was incredibly inclusive, that really involved all members of the community whenever they wanted to, however they wanted to be involved. And I think that the Student Senate passing this unanimously was really kind of a vindication of all of our efforts in that sense. And I'm really pleased that this philosophy really does embody all of the students' voice on this. You know, there was no dissent on the opinion after we edited it. And I think that really just goes to show that we were really in tune with the campus climate around freedom of expression. And so we really created a statement that did not have a lot of, you know, animus towards it.
Yeah. And so Student Senate did pass an opinion in the Opinions Committee. It was that late last fall, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the statement that came out tacked very closely to that opinion. Did the opinion that Senate passed inform what ended up becoming in the statement? Was that taken into consideration as it was being drafted?
Yeah, of course. That was part of the documents that we looked at when we went through kind of gathering all that we wanted in the fall semester. So we used things like the Student Senate opinion, all our transcripts from the roundtables and the town hall, as well as notes from all of the meetings that we had with various on-campus clubs and, you know, administrative councils, faculty councils, and Student Senate was definitely involved in that process. And I think that part of the reason why there wasn't as much debate this semester was because we did a lot last semester and we could kind of really understand where most of the student senators and the club reps were coming from at this issue, because we talked about that pretty extensively when we debated this Senate opinion.
Mm-hmm. And then, so specifically, the one change that was made between the original draft philosophy that was released and what ended up becoming the final philosophy that Senate approved and that will now head to the faculty and the Board of Trustees was the removal of a clause that said the college may seek to restrict expression that violates the college's policy on non-discrimination. Can you talk about why that particular clause was removed?
Yeah, of course. Jennifer Bloomquist kind of touched on this in the email that that was sent out to the campus with the philosophy, but really we kind of promised a review of existing college policies as we moved forward adopting this philosophy, and we were really swayed by the arguments of several of the on-campus groups that kind of said, you know, much to the effect of, if you're going to review these policies that we already have, and this philosophy is supposed to kind of be a cornerstone for existing college policies, why would you endorse an existing college policy? And I think that makes a lot of sense. So we really, where I came at that from was, you know, we shouldn't be existing endorsing college policies if President Riggs promised that we would be doing a review of existing policies to make sure that they align with the spirit of this philosophy.
And so are there any particular college policies that the committee identified or that you've identified that may need to be reviewed or revised in light of this new statement?
So that wasn't our purview at all. You know, we didn't actually have that discussion at all. That, again, would be probably more under the purview of the Student Life Committee, of whom Jeff Foster is a member. He was also a member of our on-campus work group. So questions about that would probably be best referred to him.
Mm-hmm. And then, so moving forward, the path in terms of ratification, this will next go to the faculty and then finally to the Board of Trustees. Have you heard any concerns at either of those levels regarding the draft statement, or do you anticipate any issues in it being ratified by either of those groups?
I mean, I haven't heard of any issues, but again, I don't know the faculty or the trustees as well as I kind of know a lot of the students. I don't interact with them on a weekly basis, but I would hope that they kind of see that the student body and the Student Senate represents the student body. We passed this statement unanimously. I would hope that they also believe in the same spirit of freedom of expression that the rest of the campus does.
Mm-hmm. And then, so just two more things on that. There was a suggestion at a faculty meeting in February that perhaps this ought to be sent to the full student body for ratification. The reasoning, I think, being that perhaps Student Senate is not a representative body of the students. Have you heard, A, any kind of more feedback on that, whether that will be happening? I mean, I know Student Senate just unanimously ratified this. And B, whether you think that's necessary?
I mean, I hadn't heard of that. You know, that concern was never brought to the Student Senate, really. There's never any serious discussion about doing that, and nor did we hear from anybody that really felt powerfully about that. So, I mean, the Student Senate, you know, this is kind of our job to kind of represent the student body and to be able to vote on these matters so that all of the students don't have to vote on all this stuff all the time. That's kind of the whole idea behind a republic. And if anyone has those concerns that we don't represent the student body well, I hope that they, we actually just sent out some petitions to run for student senate next year, and I hope that they get involved in the process.
Mm-hmm. And then, so just finally, in terms of the timeline, I believe there was some confusion and some changes in the faculty meeting schedule. The current plan is that the faculty will take this up, just kind of get a presentation at their first meeting after spring break on March the
22nd, I believe.
22nd, and then they'll vote on it at the following meeting on April the 5th. Is that what you understand to be, at this point, the timeline?
I believe that is the timeline. I know there's some differences between their business meetings and their kind of discussion meetings, so I believe that that is the timeline. But, you know, if we need to go to another meeting after that, like the April 16th meeting, I don't see that it's really that big of a deal.
Right. And then so finally then the trustees will next be on campus the first weekend in May, and that's when they're anticipated to take this up.
Yes, of course, that of course being dependent on the faculty ratifying this statement.
Right. All right, so switching gears a little bit to another topic that's been prevalent at Senate is sort of this whole mold mania, I guess you could call it. There was actually talk that we should have the headline of this week's Gettysburgian issue be mold mania. I vetoed that, but moving right along, you were fairly outspoken a couple weeks ago at the Senate meeting in sort of criticism of the administration's response to the mold situation. You said that the college's policies are, quote, directly flying in the face of what they're saying, and it is absurd. And quote, can you just kind of talk about what your reaction is to what the college administration initially did before that Senate meeting, and then afterwards, what they've done since, and whether that has kind of assuaged the concerns you initially raised?
Yeah, so I was pretty concerned by the initial college reaction. I think a lot of the first years were confused and kind of nervous about the college response, and I thought that that was something that really needed to be addressed. And I think that this is a pretty serious issue that, you know, even goes beyond just the Hanson Hall. You know, we've received stories from other people around campus that have mold problems. And I was really concerned that the college might not, you know, take this seriously, as they had kind of reneged on a promise of priority housing. And I really was hoping that they would kind of go back on that. And, you know, the response after the Senate meeting, I think from the college has been extremely promising. I've been extremely pleased with how responsive that they've been. You know, really, you know, just the fact that they're going to give priority housing back to the basement residents of Hanson, I think is a really, really good thing. And once they heard student concerns, you know, even people from other floors of Hanson saying, hey, look, we understand that just logistically priority housing isn't going to work for us, but, you know, why don't you at least give it to the basement residents? And the college really understood that, which I appreciate. And I think the more encouraging sign is also that the college is kind of launching a committee based on of students, faculty, and administrators, I believe, or facilities, sorry, not faculty, to really kind of review our facilities policies. And I think that's a really encouraging sign. I also think that it's a really encouraging sign that we actually have asked that Student Senate has a say in the process of who's going to be put on this committee. And so I really am encouraged by that.
And have you heard any feedback from the folks putting together this committee, whether it be Dean Ramsey or President Riggs, about whether Student Senate will be able to appoint the student members to the committee?
So I think it's going to be, right now, as I understand it, somewhat of a quasi-process of Student Senate will be able to put up a few candidates, and then College Life or whoever is in charge of this committee will be able to pick out of that. And we're actually going to be sending out some emails to students later today or tomorrow, kind of asking them, you know, who's interested in being involved on this committee. And we're going to submit some names to Dean Ramsey after break.
And so what do you see as the most important things for this committee, this work group, team, whatever we're calling it, to address?
Well, I think that transparency is probably the most important thing to address. I think that there's a lot of confusion around facilities policies and kind of why stuff may take a while, why it, you know, maybe takes a day. And I think really bringing some transparency to that process is really going to help everybody understand how this process works. Because I know a lot of the time policies can seem kind of unconscionable from the outside, but when you actually understand how they work, you're kind of like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And so if the facilities process is like this, I think that's important for students to know. But I think really bringing some transparency to the issue is going to be important. I know I was looking at some other peer institutions, kind of the way they do, and you know, this isn't really a peer institution per se, but Yale, for instance, they on their website they have kind of a chart with facilities policies, kind of ranking them by level of importance, and you know, if this problem happens, we will be there within, you know, 1 to 2 business days. If this problem happens, you know, 3 to 4 business days, something like around those lines, you know, if that would increase transparency, I think that that might be something that would be really interesting to look at. But, you know, right now, before the committee is formed, there's not a lot of point in doing a whole lot of speculation.
Uh-huh. And so from what I'm hearing from you and what I've heard from others is that the key issues, maybe even more so than the, you know, actual maintenance problems, are sort of the communication, the accountability, and the transparency. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
That's definitely where I come at the issue.
And so also switching gears again to something else I know you've been involved with, which is sort of this reform of the Senate's composition and election procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So that process is in motion now. There was a petitions, as you mentioned earlier, were sent out earlier this week by Vice President Amy Bosman. And of course, it's the vice president who currently, and I believe will continue under these new reforms to oversee elections. So why don't you just walk through sort of what the background is for this and where we're headed in case folks, you know, are not as familiar with this.
Yeah. So and last semester, Amy Bosman, who's the vice president of Senate, she kind of chaired this ad hoc committee of ours to really look at is the way we do elections the best way we possibly can? Because, you know, there are issues with CNAV voting. It's kind of a confusing process. There are issues among class years of, you know, there are a lot more, you know, first years and sophomores that run for, you know, Senate office rather than juniors and seniors. And, you know, and there's a lot of kind of confusion about the whole process. And we kind of wanted to look at our existing election process, kind of do an autopsy and kind of see, you know, how do other schools do this and how can we kind of reflect that to be the best, you know, to be the best representatives of the student body that we can be. And I think that the proposals that were drafted by her ad hoc committee were absolutely fantastic, some of which include kind of just shuffling the, because currently the conduct or the makeup of Senate, I should say, is 7 senators per year and then the exec board. And we're going to drop that to 4 senators per year that are elected.
Per class year.
Per class year, yes. And then there are also going to be 7 at-large senators. And so that would kind of address this issue of difference in interest between class years. So after all of the election results are tabulated and the 4 senators per class year are picked, then after that, the 7 most vote-getters will also become voting members of Senate. Another important reform, and one that really has been kind of a pressing issue more in previous years than this year, is that of kind of club representation in the Student Senate. I know that clubs have felt that they want more of a say in what goes on.
And so I also understand there's this idea of affinity groups for club representation. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so this was really kind of pioneered by Amy and her committee quite cleverly, I would say, to kind of really address the fact that clubs have felt that they don't really have as much of a say in the process of Senate as they have liked. And so they kind of looked at some peer institutions and realized that they also have kind of systems similar to these affinity group leaders. And so these affinity group leaders, they're going to be kind of chosen by the clubs themselves. So, you know, there are 7 different categories of affinity group leaders. And, you know, they might be, you know, political, social, cultural, et cetera. And so really, we're going to ask the clubs to kind of rank their top 3 choices for, you know, which affinity group do you think that you fall into the best? And then they'll kind of send them to us, and we as, you know, exec or board of directors will kind of just make sure that everything looks right. And then at the start of the fall semester, you know, the club reps for each of these clubs will get together, and then they'll vote on a affinity group leader who will become a voting member of Senate that has, you know, everyone is allowed to speak at Senate, but only senators are allowed to vote, and they will become a voting member.
And so I just want to kind of explore this notion of affinity groups for a second. Couldn't one essentially argue that every student already has an equal voice in Senate as manifested through, you know, they vote for their senator? So isn't this idea of an affinity group giving some students who are members of many clubs or, you know, giving them an outsized voice over other students?
And that's definitely a legitimate concern. But I think that really that hasn't really been something that we've got any pushback towards. I think really the pushback in previous years has been the fact that clubs don't have enough of a say, because so much of what we do is involved or just revolves around the clubs and the clubs kind of coming for money and being involved, invested in this process. And so I think that really it's worthwhile to make sure that the clubs feel invested in this process and that they have a voice.
And so, you know, petitions are now circulating for the various offices. Can you talk a little bit about, I know that secretary and treasurer and parliamentarian and the club liaison are no longer going to be voted upon by the full student body, rather just by Senate. Can you talk a little bit about the logic behind that?
Yeah, so again, this is if the proposals that were proposing, I guess, actually pass. And those will be going out sometime later tonight or tomorrow. And then, you know, they'll be debated by the Senate and then tabled and then ratified, hopefully, the following week. And so kind of the logic behind that was that right now we have kind of a funky executive board. You know, the executive board is comprised of the president, the vice president, the treasurer, the secretary, the parliamentarian, the club's liaison. And some of those positions are voted on by everybody. Some of them are appointed. Some of them have a quasi-process going through OSOGL. So it's really kind of this confusing mishmash of responsibilities as well, because some people are allowed to vote, some people are not. And really, it kind of does not align with what an executive board should really do. An executive board should really be kind of just, we keep the wheels on the bus. You know, we shouldn't be driving opinion of things, you know. The president is there to preside over the meeting. The vice president is there to, you know, take over if the president's not there. The treasurer should just, you know, they should be in charge of the budget process and keeping all the numbers. The parliamentarian should be there to advise on parliamentary matters and keep, you know, decorum in the meeting. The secretary should be there to take minutes and to chair, you know, just all these kind of technocratic roles. And really with the votes that everybody kind of has, it kind of takes away from that technocratic, unbiased voice that they have. And I think that was not necessarily good and kind of creates this impression of the fact that the exec board kind of runs all of Student Senate and they, you know, push everything. And that's really not what it should be. And I think that these kind of changes would address that.
And so you did mention, and to clarify, these changes have not yet been ratified.
Exactly.
Can you talk about what the process for that will look like in terms of timeline? I know we're coming up on when these elections are supposed to
be. Yeah. So with spring break, it kind of threw a wrench into everything. So we've talked about the process, and the Gettysburgian has had an article that kind of breaks down how this will work. But so essentially, over break, the proposed changes of the Constitution will be sent out to, you know, Senate and the alias. And then the Monday after break, we will introduce these changes and then we'll debate them. You know, everyone seems pretty receptive to them, so I can't imagine we'll have too spirited of a debate because everyone kind of understands the logic behind what we're doing. Then per our Constitution, it will have to be tabled for a week. And then the following Monday, we will, you know, hopefully ratify these changes. And then that Thursday is the due date for petitions.
So March the 26th is the anticipated, that Monday meeting is when you hope to have all these ratified. And then March the 29th, that Thursday, mm-hmm. Is when we'll have petitions due. And then, you know, there's also going to be part of this new thing is a forum at the meeting to kind of allow people to ask questions. In the past, there has not really been a formal process to, I guess, vet candidates. Is that kind of what this forum is intended to do?
Definitely. I think that a lot of the time you kind of just log into CNAV and kind of say, oh, I recognize this person's name. I don't really know what they stand for, you know, any of that. So I think that's really kind of doing a disservice to all the students. So, you know, the Gettysburgian has graciously consented to kind of host this forum. And, you know, I'm hoping that it is live streamed so people that can't come to the meeting can they can see this Q&A. And so then they can really get an idea of who they're voting on and what they stand by.
Yeah. And so you kind of mentioned the CNAV thing. And that's another thing that this voting, assuming these changes go through, or maybe does it have to be, is it a constitutional requirement that voting occur through CNAV? Will that be, I know there's talk of a Google form.
Yeah. So essentially the Constitution, our Senate Constitution, I should say, allows the vice president enough leeway to change voting from CNAV to a Google form. It just needs to be approved by the student Senate itself. So actually for some special elections, or maybe it was first year elections in the fall, I can't remember, we used a Google form to vote. And we actually got much higher participation through that, obviously, than through this really confusing ancient CNAV process that really doesn't make any sense. So we will be looking to use that Google form in the future. And that just makes it much easier and much more accessible to vote.
Mm-hmm. And then so the last question on this sort of election theme we've been asking all senators who have come on, do you have any plans to run for any of these officer positions next year?
So next year I will actually be going abroad in the fall. And you know, as a junior, you cannot, and you have to run for semester by semester being a senator. So I plan to run for semester, plan to run for senator spring semester of next year. But unfortunately, I will not be running for anything else.
Mm-hmm. And so the final question I wanted to get your opinion on, as long as you're here, just very recently this afternoon, President Riggs announced at a town hall meeting for support staff folks that next year's tuition will increase approximately 3.5%, bringing the comprehensive fee that includes tuition, room, and board to now just over $67,400. That's up from $65,000 and change. I just wanted to get your immediate reaction to that.
Well, I hope that the college with this tuition raise is able to continue to carry out all of its functions, those functions including having a responsive facility staff and responsive laundry staff as well. So I hope that, you know, while I'm not thrilled, obviously, about this tuition increase, that, you know, it is justified and it will be, you know, paired with increased transparency and facilities maintenance moving forward in the future.
All right, Pat McKenna, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Senate Parliamentarian Pat McKenna for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support of this project. Be sure to subscribe On Target on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts, as long as it's somewhere we publish.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the class of 2019. Who was a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.